Masterman here for Matt Bailey. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may, please.
Certainly.
Your Honor, in looking at this and in considering the briefs that have been filed, I think it's become a little bit too complicated given what really has to be done here, and I'd like to try
We appreciate simplification.
I'd like to try to simplify it because I think this is what it comes down to. Mr. Bailey went to court seeking a modification of his support downward because his income had fallen by about 40%. Judge Newman of the Arlington County Circuit Court ruled that because the possibility of his income changing was within the contemplation of the parties, that it did not matter whether his income went down 5%, 40%, or some other percent, or indeed if it went up, it was not modifiable because of that. He didn't reach the factual issue as to whether or not a 40% change in the income would have been a material change of circumstances. He instead said that a change, not that change, but a change in Mr. Bailey's income was within the reasonable contemplation of the parties, and that therefore, because this was an award of defined duration alimony, he was precluded from obtaining any kind of relief.
How much of the statute was encompassed in the PSA?
The PSA does two things. The first thing it does is it says that that it may be modified upon a material change of circumstances, full stop. The phrase, upon a change not in reasonable contemplation of the parties, doesn't appear in the PSA. However, to be fair, the PSA also refers to Virginia Code sections 20107.1 and 20109. The significance of that is one I want to de-emphasize, but I will cover because Your Honor raised it, which is 20107.1 includes the language where there would have been findings so that a judge, upon a motion for modification, could say, well, let's see, the parties contemplated this, 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 and this. This is on that set or this isn't on that set, and that would help guide the court as to whether or not it was modifiable. But the only language that was actually picked up by the parties was material change of circumstances. And I think that's significant because if you look at some other cases, there's an unreported decision from 2011 that two members of this panel actually decided, McNamee is the name of that case, that didn't reach that issue because the court had decided that it was going to decide under 20109A. And it was commented upon in that ruling that that may have not been the right standard, but since nobody had raised it, the court didn't reach that issue. The reason that might make a difference here is because the specific reference to change of circumstances, material change of circumstances, I should say, and not within the contemplation of the parties, may be something different. But let me start in a different place. I don't know that it has to be different for this decision to need to be reversed and remanded to the court. And here's why I say that. When Judge Newman elected not to reach the issue of whether a 40% change is a material change of circumstances, and I'll just say that if he concluded that that wasn't, this appeal would be different. We'd be contending that was plainly wrong.
Well, let me stop you there.
Yes, sir.
Let's assume, for the purpose of my question, that there's no question whatsoever that a 40% reduction in income would constitute a material change in circumstances, all things being equal.
Yes.
The way the statute is phrased, it's material change in circumstances not contemplated by the parties. So it seems to me that if the change, whatever it is, it could be 100% reduction, if it's contemplated by the parties, it may be material, it certainly is a change, but it's outside of the statute. And I think that's the approach Judge Newman obviously took, that he didn't reach the point because he found as a fact that this change was contemplated by the parties at the time the agreement was entered into. And I ask that question because in terms of our standard of review, the way we have to approach these things, whether we would have done something different or not, is if there's evidence to support that factual conclusion by the trial court, we're bound by it. So tell us, if you can, why, given, we're talking about, I guess, 2013 when the parties were divorced. It's no secret that the legal profession was then and is now to some extent in a turmoil. And law firms are some of them are struggling. He's an equity partner. That means, obviously, his income is going to fluctuate to some degree. And Judge Newman found that all these circumstances were foreseeable, essentially, and therefore, at the time the agreement was entered into, it was something that was considered. Why is that wrong as a matter of law?
I'm going to answer you by saying that what Judge Newman found wasn't what was within the reasonable contemplation of the parties, and here's why I say that. First of all, let's keep in mind that the year on which the 2013 agreement would have been based would have been 2012, which is the best year that's mentioned on this record by Mr. Brennan for Mr. Bailey. He was doing the best he did. He made $1,136,000 that year. His income at the time of trial, it's three different numbers are given in the transcript, but the number that was most specific was $668,710. That's a reduction of about 41%. What Judge Newman said, and you can find it actually in the appendix at pages 328 on to 329 and even on to 330, was, and it's also a case where a lot of this does turn on exactly what the property settlement says and also looking at the relevance. It does come down to my mind and whether or not this is in fact something that was contemplated, and that's really where it does come back. I'm going to skip a couple things he says here because this is where he ends up. There's a paragraph in this agreement that talks about if there is a 20% reduction, that is to $912,000, that number's in the agreement, that would be a reason that Mr. Bailey would no longer have to pay for private school of his children. Judge Newman goes on, I'm reading now from page 329 of the appendix, and I have to think, especially given, and I would concede, Mr. Masterman, that you might be on good footing that this was something that was not within the realm of their thinking, but for the fact that there is a specific clause that they did say if it went down, the amount for the school, he would not have to pay that. Now, we all think we're more articulate than we are on the transcript, but we understand that what Judge Newman meant there was the reason I'm finding this was within the contemplation of the parties is there's something somewhere in this agreement that talks about what happens if Mr. Bailey's income goes down. And that was the paragraph relating to private school. A couple things there to address your specific question. So what does that mean was in the contemplation of the parties? Let's go there. What was within the contemplation of the parties, according to their agreement, was the possibility that Mr. Bailey's income could come down by 20% from $1,136,000 to $912,000. They thought about a 20% decrease. That's the most you can say from that paragraph. But what Judge Newman did, with all due respect to Judge Newman, is he found that that meant that any change, upward, downward, to zero, as Your Honor said, would be within the
context of Judge Newman. I think he did more than that. I mean, the record reflects that he found as a fact, and again, the question is whether it's supported by the record, that at the time he entered into the PSA, Mr. Bailey knew about the loss of his biggest client. He knew about the attempted but failed merger with another firm and about the morale issues that were going on within the law firm. So, I mean, those are findings of fact that if supported by the record, would certainly arguably support Judge Newman's conclusion, it seems to me.
Two responses to that. The first is that kind of parsing of the record is the reason that I raised the issue of the 2107.1 concern, because that's not necessarily what this record reflects when you look at what made it into the agreement, what the parties said would be contemplated. And again, that would create a restriction in every case if you think about it. Here's what we know. Mr. Bailey and Ms. Bailey agreed that her spousal support would be modifiable upon a material change. The material changes, I suppose there's more than this, but the main ones you see are a change in the payor's income, a change in the payee's income. There can be changes in expenses. We'll talk about the FER case in a moment if I have time. When those things happen, when you have those sorts of changes, a party can come forward and say, this is a basis upon which I contend there's been a material change of circumstances and there needs to be a change in my support. The trial court then hears the facts and typically will rule that's a material change of circumstances or that's not a material change of circumstances. I contend, even though I understand what Your Honor has just said, I contend that Judge Newman didn't reach that. And I think that those pages of the transcript that I just referred to confirm that, because he doesn't make a finding that this is not material, this is material. He stops at the point of saying this was within the contemplation of the parties. Now, it couldn't have been within the contemplation of the parties that any change in Mr. Bailey's income wouldn't allow for modification.
That leads me to my question.
Yes, sir.
Does the word contemplation mean a reasonable possibility? Because it's always possible someone would be fired, that the law firm would collapse, that the industry would dry up. I mean, whatever. That's foreseeable that any of those things would happen. Or does contemplation mean anticipated? In other words, you're going to retire in a couple of years and your income is going to go down. Or you're going to have a certain degree of fluctuation, which we can show has occurred over the past. But you've never had this 40% drop previously. So that's what I'm trying. I mean, I think there's this basic definitional matter, which is, what does contemplation mean?
Contemplation means closer to anticipation, if not exactly anticipation. And we've known that for 25 years because that's Srinivasan. That case talks about not just is it something that could happen, but it talks about is it something that the parties reasonably...
Well, let me follow up on that. Because
yes, sir.
I think that puts the finger on what we're all kind of wrestling with here. At the time this agreement was entered into, if Judge Newman's observations are correct, and,
yes,
I, don't hear you, and I don't hear you disputing them, that at the time he signed the agreement... the biggest client of the firm was gone. The merger had failed, and there were some other issues going on morale-wise in the law firm. If those facts are known to your client at the time he signs the agreement, is it unreasonable, and this follows up on Judge McCullough's question, is it unreasonable to anticipate, as Judge Newman seemed to conclude, that the income is going to drop? Maybe not any particular number, but the income is going to go down to some significant degree. And if that's the case, where does that leave us from the standpoint of applying the statute?
The furthest you can take that is to conclude that his income could change. But could it change to this magnitude? The most they mentioned in their agreement was 20%. I want to commend the case of Furr versus Furr from 1992.
And you are to your rebuttal.
I'll do that. Yes, sir.
May it please the court, Jeff Lohringer on behalf of Ms. Bailey, and at counsel table with me is Melissa Shefkind, and I'll admit right out of the box that she probably carried more of the water on the brief than I did.
Maybe we ought to hear from her then.
You probably should, Your Honor. Let me answer a question that Judge Haley asked, which is, what did the property settlement agreement say about modification? And what it said was that either party would be able to petition in the event of a change of circumstances.
That's my question to you. Is change of circumstances surplusage?
In that section?
In that section?
Yeah. I think.
And so that has no meaning, because under your view of the property settlement agreement, the husband's financial responsibility can never change.
That's not correct. Let me answer the first point. I think in that section, when it says change in circumstances, it goes on to say in accordance with, and it refers to two sections of the code, 2107.1 and 2109. And 2109 has two parts, A, which is indefinite or permanent alimony, and 2109B, which is term-limited alimony. And there's no dispute that's what we had here. We had 15 years. And in the context of a term-limited alimony, it has to be within something that's not within the contemplation of the parties. And I'm going to pick on something that Judge McCullough said. What you have here is somebody that is an equity partner in a law firm. And they're not a W-2 wage earner working for the federal government where their income in all likelihood is going to take a clear path. It's going to look more like...
Go back to my question.
Sure.
And that is, the phrase in the property settlement agreement, change of circumstances,
right,
according to your argument, is meaningless.
No, it's not, because
What circumstances would happen that would permit the husband's obligation to be changed?
So So, for instance, on his expense side.
I'm sorry?
On the expense side, if his income, forget about his income, but all of a sudden he developed an illness and he had a drug that was not covered by insurance that he had to pay every month, and therefore he no longer had the wherewithal after making an unanticipated expense to pay support.
So you say that he could petition for a change downward if his expenses increased?
Sure, dramatically. Not that they contemplated.
But he can't change for a change in payment if his income drastically changes.
Not if it was within the contemplation of the parties. That's what Judge Newman found. And that's what Judge Humphreys picked up on. That in the case...
Well, for example, I guess your example would be if he was hit by a bus and couldn't work. He was late, you know, just unable to work at all. That certainly would be outside of the contemplation
sure.
of the parties, but the result would be the same.
Right.
Here, I understand your argument to essentially be, we have this continuum over time of the law firm practice, and, you know, given his position as a partner as opposed to a salaried employee, you know, everybody's aware or accepts that there's a given fluctuation here based on market conditions, you know, clients, that sort of thing. And there are certain facts known to him, business that were business related at the time he entered the agreement. That was the basis for Judge Newman's conclusion. Is that
That's correct. That's correct. And I just want to pivot back and just answer other examples. In this case, Mrs. Bailey was not working at the time. She was a lawyer, too, but she was not employed and not worked outside the home in 14 years. And there, as is always the case in these matters, there's a dispute about what her worth in the job market was going to be when she reentered. He had the right, if by the terms of the agreement, if she was able to exceed $80,000 a year,
yeah.
that would be a material change. And he could come in and he could... petition. So it wasn't a meaningless, which is what I think Mr. Bailey argues, that it was somehow an illusory right to petition for a change of modification. There were facts that would give him a right to do it, but this was not one. This one, and I think what persuaded Judge Newman was everything that you've identified that he was aware of when he signed the agreement. Within the four corners of the document is the evidence that the parties anticipate.
Doesn't that undermine your argument to some extent where there's the provision dealing with a schooling, which is absolves them of that responsibility on a far less drastic drop in income, and with her working, it's also a far less drastic increase in her, right? In other words, you hit $80,000 as opposed to drop from $1 million to $600,000 and whatever it was. So... do those two clauses, which involved a far less significant fluctuation, undermine the argument that the 40% drop is not a material change? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a question whether it's material because the court never reached it, whether in this context it was material. But these are two different obligations. Remember that the reduction of the 20% was... the trigger for his no longer having to pay a discretionary expense, enrolling the children in private school. By the way, at the time we had the hearing, they had 5 children in private school. They now have 2 emancipated, so they're down to 4 in private school. So essentially, if you look at what the parties were looking at, it was keeping the children in private school, which was a discretionary expense, and when should he be relieved of that obligation? Clearly, when he's freed of paying that after-tax obligation. The purpose of that then, right, is to have more money left to meet the basic needs of the parties, including the support of Ms. Bailey. Okay, so that's a discretionary expense, whereas I wouldn't call supporting your former spouse discretionary. On the $80,000, I think some of it, if you look at the way the agreement is structured, there's 3 years at $22,500, and then it levels off at $22,000. The theory being she needed a runway to get up to $80,000. And so, but... her position, obviously, was 80 is going to be my ceiling. I'm entering the job market, you know, late in life. I haven't been there in a long time. He obviously was more optimistic, and he's saying, so if you go from 0 to 80, right, that's a much bigger increase for her as a percentage. She was earning nothing all of a sudden. So I think that those are parallels or arguments that Mr. Bailey wants to kind of create some sort of symmetry that the percentages all mean something. I think what Judge Newman was looking at is what did these parties know? What was in their contemplation?
Right. Does the record support, I mean, obviously, when you're an equity partner in one of these firms, you're never going to get exactly the same salary. You're just not, or the same income, because you're just not salaried.
Correct.
So you have a great year, and but what would support factually such a that the parties anticipated a drop of that magnitude?
Well,
I mean, as I understand, it was unprecedented for his work history.
Certainly not the drop at the 40%. I do have to make a point right here, just so that we're clear. That was his projected income for 2015. Okay, the year had not closed. In fact, when he filed the petition, the year had just started. And I think there was a lot of testimony in the record that more than one occasion, they did better than that was projected.
Right.
I mean, that is nothing more than the firm looking at the metrics and saying, well, if, you know, last year
we don't have those numbers in front of us, so...
No, except but what Judge Newman... What I'm saying is we don't have any... Nobody knows what he made when we had the hearing in 2015 because the books had not closed. In fact, he didn't know that until a couple weeks ago, right? But my point is, to answer your question, I think that what Judge Newman and what I argued was that the parties clearly indicated there was going to be a fluctuation. And I was listening to Mr. Surville's case when you're saying three-year average. I think there has to be more than a one-minute change in your income before you have something material happen because of the ups and downs.
Right, but as you say, the court didn't get to materiality.
Correct.
And so I'm fine with if the basis of the bargain, and you can point in the record, he knew this client was gone. He knew this other client was gone, and that was going to impact his income, and so he could have factored that into the way he negotiated the agreement. But if that was an unexpected development, as opposed to just ordinary fluctuation, then that's a different scenario.
Well, I think it's the initial one, which is exactly what we were arguing. He did know the clients were gone. The biggest client was gone. He knew the firm was investigating a merger because its economics weren't. And they did take the time to put in the agreement other triggers to relieve him of obligations. So he clearly understood and had a concern that his income could drop, and he may not be able to continue to pay the discretionary expense of private school. So that was their mindset. He did not think that his income was going to be going up. And so it was within the contemplation of these parties that there was going to be fluctuations in his income. And I guess the point I'm making is we were 15 months into the it was July of 2013, and it was February when he filed. So what is that? 22 months into the agreement, when he files a motion for modification, I mean, I'm sorry, it was 17 months. He hadn't even gotten 2 full years under his belt at that point. And so I don't think it was in the contemplation of these parties that fluctuations, unless they were over some extended period of time, to where you could get to the point and say, I'm no longer earning at a level that I anticipated, that I'm entitled to a modification. Okay, that they clearly knew and anticipated there were going to be ups and downs in his income over this 15-year period, and they made provision for it. And that's what I think Judge Newman felt. That's his opinion, and it wasn't just with the agreement.
They should have put in specific trigger points the way they did with the...
With the other things. And he took the risk of that, right? And the flip of the coin then, obviously, is Miss Bailey, because her standard of living is set at the level of the marriage, right? She wouldn't be able to come in just because his income was rising and ask for more support during the term. She would have to show that she no longer can meet her needs at the standard established during the marriage. So if his view of the world, if she was going to ride down with him, if they were going to have that sort of discussion, then the flip of the coin would be that she'd also have to ride up with him, which the agreement didn't provide. So I think he could have addressed this the same way he addressed it in the context of the children's education, and he didn't do it.
But so your bottom argument is, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that both parties, when they signed this property sale agreement, contemplated this man would have a 40% drop in income. Is that your argument?
My argument is they contemplated that his income would fluctuate. 40%, I have to be honest, I don't... Clearly, They were looking, let me put you this way, 20% after-tax dollars, which is what was going to be the tripwire to pay the children's education, was in their contemplation, right? If that's 20% of his gross income relieves him of his obligation to pay an after-tax obligation.
Well, as Judge McCullough inquired, why shouldn't that language be considered in the language on the support?
Well, I think the reason is because they could have included it, and they didn't, right? They took the time to specifically set for Ms. Bailey what would constitute a material change, and they showed that they knew how to do it in the context of the children's private school education, but they didn't import that language into the agreement for spousal support. What they said for spousal support is they referred to the statute, and the question is what was in the contemplation of the parties. And it seems to me what Judge Newman found is that these parties contemplated that there were going to be fluctuations in the income of Mr. Bailey during the term of this, and that based on that, he could not come in and seek a modification. I don't have anything further to say except we've actually also asked the court for an award of fees in conjunction with. Thank you.
Thank you.
With apologies to the Romans, I'm going to try to speak a little Latin here. Expressio unius ex exclusio alterius is a doctrine that we all learned a long time ago. What it means in English is if you contemplate certain things and put them in your agreement, leaving the other ones out was on purpose. So what did these parties say were going to be the contemplated circumstances? Her making less than $80,000 a year wasn't going to be a trigger, and his income going down 20% would allow him to change what he did as far as private school. That's all they said. Nobody was thinking about 40%. Yes, it's true that he knew that his income could fluctuate. But that was true in the Furr case, which I started to mention before. The Furr case is a 1992 case. It's cited in the brief. And it's also a case that cites Srinivasan, which I mentioned in my argument in chief. The important part of that case is it talks about the fact that Ms. Furr's income had remained basically flat, but her needs had gone up by more than double. And she went to court saying, look, from time to time I need a new car, my real estate's costing me more, my house needs fixing up, things are costing more just from general inflation. And the trial court said all of that was foreseeable at the time that you were in here last time, 5 years earlier. So we're not going to give you any increase because that was within the contemplation of what you were doing. The Court of Appeals said no. Under Srinivasan and applying the standard, it's not just what somebody could conceivably think of or what might happen, it's what was reasonably foreseeable. Going to your point about, you know, is this something that is actually likely to happen versus completely unexpected? A 40% change here, we submit, was unexpected. Sure, Judge Newman could hear all the evidence. He could decide on the merits that it wasn't material or decide it was material and still not make a change, but he didn't reach the issue, so we don't know whether he would have done any of those things. My argument is he needed to reach that issue. To your point, Judge, the document and the agreement says that this can be modified upon the petition of either party. So that means that Ms. Bailey could ride up or down upon a material change. And material change does have to mean something in this agreement. Otherwise, you're not reconciling the agreement with the statute and making all of its terms mean something. As far as the examples that were used of times when this could be modified, health insurance is mentioned in this agreement. Her expenses are mentioned in this agreement. Because they were mentioned, does that mean that they were foreseen? We can't have that rule. That would mean every agreement that says that the parties will recalculate child support upon a party emancipating based on their current incomes would mean that spousal support, if for a defined duration, could not be altered. Thank you for your time, courts.
Thank you very much. We'll come down and